So I welcome all of you to English Dhamma discussion. Till Bhante Dhamma Jiva returns, so we are going to conduct the English Dhamma discussions on Thursdays. We were discussing Mahadhana Sutta last time, and now we have Chatuchakka Sutta. So the procedure is that I'll read the Pali verses, and then Venerable Dhamma Alankara will read the Sinhala translation. And then I invite Venerable Dhammosada to read the English translation from Bhikkhu Bodhi's book. And then we are going for a kind of a discussion. Hope few others also will join. And now we are going to start the session. And Chatuchakka Sutta. So the Pali verses like this. The deity mentioned like this. Chatuchakkan Navadvaraṁ Punnang lobhena sangyutang pankajatang mahavira kathang yatra bhavissati. Then Buddha mentioned chetva nandhing varattancha iccha lobhancha papakang samulang tanhang abbuiha evang yatra bhavissati iti.
Chatuchakka sutraya savatnuvara devi මහාවීරයන් වහන්ස මේ ශරීරායනය මේ ශරීර යානය සතරක් ඇත්තේය. නවදොරක් ඇත්තේය. අසූචියෙන් පිරුණේය. ලෝභයෙන් යුක්තය. මඩෙහි උපන එහි නික්ම යෑම කෙසේ වන්නේද? භගවත්රු රැහැනද වරපටද ලාමක ඉච්ඡාවද ලෝභයේද සිඳ තෘෂ්ණාව සහමුලින් උදුරාලීමෙන් මෙසේ නික්ම යෑම වන්නේ.
සයි ස්වාමීන් වහන්සේ.
Yeah.
This the title of this sutta is Four Wheels.
Four Wheels. Mm-hmm.
And the Deva says, having four wheels and nine doors filled up and bound with greed, born from a bog, O great hero, how does one escape from it? And the Buddha responds, having cut the thong and the strap, having cut off evil desire and greed, having drawn out craving with its root, thus one escapes from it.
Can you repeat the first sentence? Having cut what?
Having cut the thong and the strap.
Thong and the strap. Thong and the strap. Varatanche. Varatanche. Mm-hmm.
Pretty much the same thing, thong and strap.
Okay. So if I go to the Attakata, and it mention Chatuchakkangriyavahata. So there's a Sinhala translation related to the this, because there are certain terms which are not that clear to me. Now, Chatuchakkang. So basically it mentioned about the four postures, Chatuchakkang. Four postures. And Navadvarang means nine doors. What are the nine doors? Nine doors?
The nine doors mean the nine orifices of the body.
Body.
The holes.
Yeah. Can you tell them what are they?
Each one of them?
Yeah. Two eyes. Two eyes.
Two nose doors.
Yeah. Four.
Two ears.
Yes. Then six. Mouth.
Mouth.
Seven.
Anus.
Eight.
And
Urine.
Nine.
Yeah. So those are the nine doors. And then punnang, so that is filled with fetus, right? Right, feces. And lobhena sangyutang, so filled with tanha, the craving. Katanyata bhavissati, so how one would cross over. So how this whole thing can have a release. Naddhi is the baddha vaire, So basically one would start with a kind of a resentful thought, angry thought, and then it will be grown to another level of revengeful thought. And then the baddhavaira means kind of a lasting type of a revengeful thought. Say not being satisfied in this life, he may even try to get the revenge even the future lives. Very, very strong type of a revengeful thought, baddhavaira. Varattang, chitta nandhing varattancha. So basically, here it is mentioned tanha varapata. So tanha is mentioned as the thorn. Tanha is the thorn, according to the Attakatha, according to the commentary. And then, avashesha varapata edata. Here varapata dindana yana gathana krishna varapata. You have any English translation, any Bhikkhu Bodhi has given any notes? Yeah, if you can read them, that would be better. Because here the certain information is very much with the similes. So what each simile represent, we need to discuss.
Right.
Yeah.
So perhaps I should repeat the first verse.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
So the first verse, the Devata says, having four wheels and nine doors, filled up and bound with greed, from born from a bog, O great hero, how does one escape from it? And the notes say that the four wheels are the four modes of deportment, that is, walking, standing, sitting, lying down.
Yeah, that's correct. So basically, that those are the four postures that the... Now, here it's actually talking about the body. So body and the mind all together. So the body has this... It maintains these four postures. It is having these nine doors. Yeah, go ahead.
The nine doors are the nine wound openings that we just enumerated. And when they say that it is filled up with impure, it is filled up, it means that it is filled up with impure body parts, the hair, nails, etc.
Right.
And bound with greed means that it is bound with craving. And when they ask, how does one escape from it? They mean, how can there be emergence from such a body? How can there be freedom, release, and transcendence of it?
Right.
When they say it is born from a bog.
Mm-hmm.
A bog is a...
mud. Kind of mud?
Yes, yeah, like a swamp, very soft. It is unable to support mm-hmm. a permanent structure.
Mm-hmm.
So that is what they take to mean the womb of the mother.
Right.
Because it is produced in the foul bog of a mother's womb. That's what the first verse means.
No, some more. I mean, this, what is the thorn and all?
A thorn. Bhante, in the first verse...
Second.
Ah, all right. So I'll proceed to the second verse. Yeah. Having cut the thong.
Thong,
yes.
Uh-huh.
And the strap.
Strap.
Yep. Having cut off evil desires and greed, having drawn out craving with its root, thus one escapes from it. And the notes say that... 56. The thong is hostility.
Thong is hostility. Mm-hmm.
Yes. The strap means remaining defilements.
Remaining defilements. Not the craving, but the remaining defilements.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Desire and greed refer to the same mental state spoken of in two senses. That is, desire is the is primarily weak stage, and desire for what has not been obtained.
Mm-hmm.
And greed, lobha, is a subsequent strong stage or the holding to an acquired object. And craving with its root means with its root of ignorance.
Mm-hmm. So basically, chetva nadhing varattancha iccha lobhancha papakam samulan tanhang abbiha evang yatra bhavisatiti chetva nadhing. So the having cut off the hostility, and then varattancha, having cut off the other defilements, because already mentioned the iccha lobha, that is papakang. So there is a type of evil type of desire, so that is also being cut off. Samulan tanhang abhuya, so again the craving uprooted. Evang yatra bhavisati, then only you will be able to free from the so-called body. So that's what I feel. Can you repeat the English translation again? It also mentions simply using the similes.
The second verse is, having cut the thong and the strap, having cut off evil desires and greed, Having drawn out craving with its root, thus one escapes from it.
Correct, right. So here actually, chitta nadding. So means tongue, right? Tongue. So the tongue is a simile used for the hostility. And then varattancha, that's the strap, is a simile used for the other defilements. So sometimes, I mean, certain verses are there, it's difficult to understand directly, the direct meaning is not evident. So you have to go some detail and to recognize what each simile, what each, analogy is giving. And here, the Buddha's answer giving such kind of an answer, where chitta naddhi means cut off the tongue. So what is the tongue? What the tongue represents? And then varattancha, and are going and similarly cut off the strap. So what he meant by strap? So these are the things that we need to sometimes refer the commentary, so that we can try to understand what it really meant. Iccha lobancha papakang. So that is obvious. So that is a type of unacceptable, unethical kind of iccha, kind of a desire, and the greed. And samulan tanhang abhyuhe. That's also obvious. So the whole craving has to be uprooted. Then only you will be able to be free from the so-called body. So now the body basically represent not merely the physical part, but it here we can say complete the body and the mind, because chatuchakkan chatu navadvaram punnan lobhena sanyuta. So lobhena sanyuta is so it is basically filled with greed. So the greed is in the mind basically, so not in the body. So the since the so-called body and the mind is something that we are being bound with, we are being trapped with, tangled with. So how are you going? How someone would going to be free from it? So the Buddha's answer explains certain areas. So one thing is you have to avoid any kind of a hostility. That means starting from the anger, typical maybe little resistance, little frustration that would grow towards the little bit of anger, and then it might go towards resentment. Resentment may lead to revengeful thought. And ultimately, maybe a kind of a strong hostility. You might take the revenge even from generations. So it will grow to a very, very strong level. Not just mere using the person, but even the children, father, mother, the whole family. So likewise, a very strong kind of a hostile thoughts. And that all has to be abandoned. That all has to be abandoned. And then the varattancha, all the other defilements also has to be abandoned. And again, those are related to the, if we say those are merely into the anger side, then separately it is mentioned iccha lobancha papaka, whatever other greed side defilements. Now typically there are two extremes, either we like or either we dislike. Or hate, we can simply say. To something, we have a kind of a greed. To other thing, we may have a kind of a resentful thought, a kind of a hate. So both sides have to be abandoned. So it's a little descriptively, it's mentioned. Iccha lobancha papakam. Samulan tanhang abhiya. So the tanha has to be uprooted. So tanha is the root cause of the suffering. Sanha mentioned as the dukkha samudaya, the cause of suffering. And then only you will be able to freely navigate. A difficult way it is sort of presented. Now I think things are somewhat clear. And the question also asked from a different way. So chatu chakkang. So there are four kinds of wheels. Now wheels represent that we can move. Right? So the body can move, body can continue its existence using the four postures. Sometimes we sit, sometimes we stand, sometimes we walk, sometimes we lie down. So these are the four postures we continuously make use of during the day till our death. Either we walk, either we stand, either we sit, either we lie down. So these are the postures. Postures are a very, very important area. Even in the Satipatthana, we are talking about it. Navadvaram. Other thing is the nine doors. Nine doors, the orifices, as you mentioned, the other term mentioned there is what? That's another beautiful term. Nine doors, and in this explanation, there is something else. Wounds. Wound openings. Wound openings. So, wound openings. Anyway, so those are typically, so those are the areas that we ignorantly like. So someone's eyes, now say someone is fallen in love. So her eyes may be something attractive. Her ears may be something attractive. Mouth may be attractive. All the other things may be attractive. But for the wise person, so they are the ones where the all the oozing areas. All the things now say the through the eyes, what is it called? Not only tears. The other thing, when you are waking up, there is something. Cover. I don't know English term. Say not the tears, but there is another thing. I'll say once you wake up in the morning, certain kind of sand. Okay, so that is there, and through the ears also something. The wax, no? Yeah, wax. That's also oozing. And then the nose, the snot, and other liquids are oozing. And through the mouth, maybe the saliva and the other, what else? Phlegm, those things are oozing. And obviously the urinal will take, and that will remove the urine, and the other side, the anus will remove the feces. So all are actually the impure things, but ignorantly people attracted to those also. When the opposite sex is considered, so people even attracted to those. Complete ignorance is there, lust is there. Lust has made someone completely blindfolded, isn't it? So because of lust, one can become completely blindfolded. And so then we will not look at from this angle. We might look at from a different angle. We consider it as completely attractive, pretty beautiful, and we want it. I like it. So this is how we typically consider, and even to oneself. Say someone, either to someone else's these nine doors, or to one's own nine doors. And we consider those are pretty useful, attractive, necessary, and quite precious. So that's the kind of an angle that we typically ignorantly think. And the other things mentioned, the four postures, nine doors, punnang lobhena sangyuta, and the mind is filled with greed. Pankajatang. Now it is born on the mother's womb. At the beginning, it's starting with a very ugly area, not an attractive area. So the human body is not something immediately appear like in the heavenly realm, typically what we call as the opapathika. Opapathika means immediately, as a result of their karmic potential. So their body won't go through as ours, but immediately they are born, their body will be born with a complete faculties. But ours different, so we will start with the very slightest kind of the elements, and ultimately slowly it will grow in the mother's womb. So mother's womb is not an attractive place either, filled with so many things, ultimately with lot of pain, ultimately it will be flushed out the body. Both are in a really critical side, either mother can die, the child can die. So if everything happens smoothly, okay, mother also survive, the child also survive, infant also survive. Okay, now a child is there. So this is how we are born, isn't it? Can you remember how you are born? And samu pankajatang mahavira kathang yatra bhavissati. So how one would be able to completely free from all this, to be free from this body and the mind. So the Buddha's answer particularly highlight about the defilements. in one side the hate side is highlighted, the other side is the greed side, and then only he'll be able to be free. And particularly mentioned about this tanha. Tanha is the root cause, the craving. Craving is the root cause. And then if one is able to cut off all that, then one would be able to be free. So any comments?
Asai Swaminathan, I do have a relative who recently underwent some surgical operation.
Mm.
And it involved the removal of an organ.
Mm.
This is a relative who is very close to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember feeling and thinking,
mm-hmm.
these bodies of ours, they're just like a jar of cookies. You can open it and take things out and close it again.
Correct.
And that really left a feeling of disgust. And
yes, yes. Yeah. So this the covering, the wrapper, the skin appear like the beautiful wrapper to which we feel attracted to, but once the skin is taken out and the whole thing what appears is completely unattractive, completely loathsome, but we ignorantly can't see it. We can't simply even penetrate few microns. So if you are able to remove this, simply the outer layer, outer sheath, the layer of the skin, that is also very completely unattractive, it's kind of loathsome. But unfortunately, our minds don't do it. We're simply being attracted to the appearance, the shape, and the color even. Now, this color also may be changing. I mean, one day it may be, say, after a while, it can change. So as one become old, so the skin color may, skin complexion may become varied. It might not be beautiful. But when one is young, so we'll feel attracted to the same figure, same kind of a color, complexion, appearance, all that. So we feel attracted. But if we look at it from this angle, so this particular body also go through these four postures: sitting, lying down, standing, walking. So these are the four postures the body is continuously maintaining. The other thing is, nine doors are there, either you like it or not. What is continuously oozing out are the impurities, isn't it? So every day, every morning, we have to clean it. So you have to wash your face, you have to urinate, you have to remove the feces, you have to, defecate. You have to defecate. So all that are there, but we typically cover it beautifully using the beautiful clothes, and we give a beautiful name and apply some scent and powder and, you know, nicely comb the hair and apply lipsticks, Q-tex and all that. Beautiful. So beautiful, and then we offer that maybe the Miss Sri Lanka, Miss World, all that is there. So ultimately we are attracted and we have love towards that person and we get married. And maybe what happened next? Awarded. Yeah. Yes, they'll be awarded. And say then we like and we go after them and then we get married. After that, the same process. This another being will be born onto that muddy womb. So he also go through the same thing as we are. So kind of funny, by the way. But unfortunately, we can't understand this whole process. We see the outside appearance only, not being able to penetrate at least few microns to see the reality of the body, isn't it? So that's why sometimes the Buddha talks about the asubha bhavana, the loathsomeness of the body, again and again reflecting. So okay, what this body consists of, right? So it has the body hair, head hair, and then the nails, skin, and all these different components, body parts. So actually it has different advantages. One thing is assume that you have a certain conceit about your own body. Sometimes people appear beautiful and pretty, and sometimes since they are at their youth, they feel strong, beautiful, and that can lead to a certain conceit in their mind, right? They are walking with few feet high and thinking, okay, I am the boss, I am the prettiest, I am the strongest, I am the most handsome person. A kind of a conceited mindset. Conceit is there. So not only that they are being ignorant about their reality of the body, but as a result of the body shape or strength or pretty, so they become completely conceited. But unfortunately, that appearance may not last for a long time. So assume that a beautiful girl, so once they get married, after some time, they give birth to a few children, and with time, they completely change the appearance. But we fools ignorantly attract and we promote and we being completely deluded. But ultimately, we find, okay, on the one sense, we might not find the same person what we thought from the qualities point of view. I mean, the mental qualities point of view. The other thing is from the body attraction point of view. So the beauty point of view, the outer appearance point of view. There may be instances that you feel, okay, is this the thing that I really liked? Is it the person that I really looked for? Is this the person that I being attracted? So you might even regret about what you are doing. So actually, recently one of my friends, so he's a married guy, and he mentioned something similar. So after he married, he had the affair at the university, and after they married, so one day the wife is asking, why are you really like this body? So the wife is asking. For her, she understands what impure it is, but his husband is really like it. Husband really like the body, so the wife is asking, why are you crazy fellow? Why you really like this body? So then he also will understand, he's my friend actually. Yes, my goodness, to this I am liking all this time. I have desire all this time to this filthy body. Now only he got a kind of a sense of reality. Till that he was ignorantly attracted to the body. We may start having an affair, love affair, we like her and all that, but underneath is the lust, kind of ignorant lust is there. So lust basically has completely blindfolded us. It's particularly mentioned. Rago ko auso achakku karano. Rago anjana karano. Anibbana sangvatniko. Achakku karano. Achakku karano means your eyes being blindfolded. You can't see now. Say you have an affair with somewhere which is not appropriate, for example. Just to give an example, assume that you are a teenager, 20 years old, and assume that you start an affair with a 30-year-old woman, a married woman, say, for example. Others can understand it's not really appropriate, right? So the young guy being blindfolded. So if his parents would advise him, the teachers advise him, and all that, but this fellow can't understand at that time. He will simply ignore, he will fight for her, and he will go after her. Even he may be ready to even give up his life for her. So his eyes are completely blindfolded. He can't see the reality. So on such cases, now assume that's very much like obsessed in that case. So the person is very, fairly, really obsessed. Wherever he see, wherever he think, he may be thinking, seeing that person, that woman, completely blindfolded. He can't see the reality. He can't see the consequences. He's simply being blindfolded. Achakku karano, anjana karano. His wisdom is completely blocked. He can't see, he can't understand now things. The wisdom is blocked. Achakku karano, then anibbana sangvatan. He completed, burning with different kinds of desires, burning with different problems. Now people are maybe attacking, or assume that woman has a husband. And then he's also into the picture, and the parents are also attacking him, and all those different things are there. Many, many problems are there, but this person is now being burned by all that. So far away from Nibbana, very, very far from Nibbana. So these things are very common, I mean, in the society. So these kind of unlawful or unethical, but still people are dying for that. So people can even die for that, kill even the other person to possess that person. All these things are very, very common incidents in every day. Complete blindfolding is there when one is attracted to such way based on the lust. Ignorant lust is there. But if we are look at from a different angle, say what we really like, what is inside, isn't it? As you mentioned, so once you open the skin and assume that you cut off the ribs and then open, oh, this the pump is working. Lub, 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 lub. The pump is working. You know, the heart. So the heart is pumping this thing. The open heart surgeries, if you see. So the whole machine is there. So we can't see the machine. So we only see the outer appearance. So say when you are going to buy a car, so you see the appearance, how it's beautiful shape and the color of the car and all that. So this is what we being attracted. But what is inside is sometimes we ignore. So similarly, the human body is also very similar. So it is filled with so many things, but we are ignorant about it. We can't see it. When the woman is beautifully cover her body with various attire and beautiful jewelry and etc. So the other guys easily get blindfolded. We get attracted. We start going after. We start loving, having an affair. And without her, now we can't live. Isn't it? One might go to that level, okay, I can't live without you. Please marry me. So they kneel on in the front of the woman and, please, would you like to marry me? So this is how the things are happening. So very funny in a way. So that blindfolding is very interesting area that you can't see the reality on such situation. Even your mother inform you, even your father advise you, teachers advise you, elders advise you. You can't understand. So mind is completely obsessed, covered with lust, greed, maybe the ignorance. So, but the other thing is that sometimes people go to the other extreme, like they start hating the body. So they practice Asubha Bhavana for a long time and they reveal what is inside and quite loathsome, and they feel disgusted about their own body. So that is going to the other extreme. So that is another area that we need to know, particularly when people are practicing Asubha Bhavana, the loathsomeness of the body. It can take you a very another kind of extreme. Say you start hating the body. So is this the one I have, or something like that? So you start hating the body and you might even want to suicide. So that's the other extreme. Because you feel disgusted about your own body. You have gone to another extreme. And you want to commit suicide. Because this is so loathsome, I don't want it. I hate it. So that is the wrong side again. So if you are practicing Asubha Bhavana, very, very important to come to the middle, rather than going to the extremes. So assume that your mind is in a lustful, ignorant situation. So immediately you might not be able to practice Anapanasati or any kind of a such subtle meditation object. Probably Asubha Bhavana may be useful, because to neutralize the mind. So you are very much like neutralizing the mind. But if you go to the other extreme, you keep on practicing Asubha Bhavana, keep on practicing Asubha Bhavana, loathsomeness of the body. So you one day start feeling hateful about the body. You feel disgusted about the body. And you even hate the body. You hate yourself. I want to commit suicide. I don't want it. I want to get rid of it. So that is the other extreme. It has happened during the Buddha's time also. So there is this third Parajika, the The content is that where Buddha teach the monks about this Asubha Bhavana, and they keep on practicing Asubha Bhavana, and ultimately they start hating themselves, hating their bodies, and now they want to commit suicide. So how they did was, they asked another person, okay, if you kill me, I'll give you all the robes and ball and all whatever my belongings, please do it. They have gone to that extreme. So therefore, when one is practicing Asubha Bhavana, it is very, very important to recognize when your mind is free from lust. Assume that you started with the lustful state and you keep practicing Asubha Bhavana. Now assume that the lust is not there. At that moment, you need to stop it. If you continue to practice, then it can jump to the other extreme, to the other side where you feel resentful about the body, the hateful about the body, disgusted about the body. So that is where we are losing the balance again. That we have to be careful, because sometimes people, without knowing the limit, they continuously practice Asubha Bhavana. That also avoid any joy in the mind. You know, for the practice, it is necessary to have inner joy, inner happiness. So inner happiness will lead you to samadhi, the concentration. But if you don't have some joy, happy mentality in the mind, rather if you start hating yourself, disgusted about yourself, then your meditation might not grow. So therefore it is very important to understand where we are, what is the state, is it filled with lust or now completely free of lust, and I am in the middle, the mind is fairly neutral. So once it is neutral, no lust, no greed, then it is pretty good for the continuous practice. So likewise, so these things are the areas I feel worth talking. Anyone to contribute?
First thing that came in my mind is that, like, when we look from the perspective that we think like certain things of the body are beautiful or ugly, is on perception level, isn't it? It's a level of perception.
Mm-hmm.
So, or like also, how to say, it's a subjective point of view. It's not an objective point of view, even if you say it's ugly, isn't it? I'm not sure. It's still a defiled kind of view. It's not an ultimate reality, isn't
mm-hmm.
it?
We can't say yes, it is not the ultimate reality. But the point is, now typically we can't immediately go to the ultimate. So first of all, we have to work out at the conventional level. Now, because we are working with the conventional level, the outer appearance level, the names and labels and all that, the value given by the society. So we being fooled by that. So we being attracted. We are also following the same path. So at that level, now you are giving to some extent, you are giving certain tools, okay, to avoid that. Okay, this is what really available there, so don't be a fool like that. So like that, you are being somewhat minimized about that complete blindfolded conventional convention driven kind of a mentality. Say you are to some extent okay healed. Later you can go to the further depth using the elements, meditation and all. So it will take you to the fairly absolute level. Yeah.
Because from my personal life, I try to avoid these two kind of things. I don't know why I don't look at it like this. I understand it when they teach like that, but I don't do like that. I don't find it really beneficial. I don't know.
Yeah, because even in Nisanane, we don't much promote the Asubha Bhavana because... when we start practicing Anapanasati and all that, so there may be a situation that you start understanding the lustful thought as a lustful thought. So rather than you are developing the opposite kind of a tendency in the mind. So if you are able to understand lustful thought as lustful thought, angry thought as an angry thought, so likewise then it's a fairly a direct practice. But the problem is, to come to that level you need some time. You can't immediately develop your mind to that level, because typically what happens is, whenever a lustful thought happen in the mind, because of its attractiveness, you immediately start driving it. So you know, you are further promoting it. Ultimately, your mind completely become lustful.
We do before we see our practice, we see the truth.
Yeah, So because the Satipatthana practice takes some time to come to that the proper understanding level, say where you are able to step out and look at the lustful thought as a mere lustful thought, not being attracted or not being completely driven by it. But till you reach that understanding, Asubha Bhavana may be useful. That's why it's a kind of a conventional tool. Okay, you are giving some kind of a reference. Okay, you see what it is. You are being reminded, rather than simply taking it as a conventional beautiful advertisement. Okay, you look at it. Okay, you open it and see what really it is. And to some extent, it is helpful to abandon the lust temporary. By the way, temporary. Abandon the thing temporary, but later as we practice Satipatthana and once you reach the Cittanupassana level, Dhammanupassana level, you are at a very advanced level where you are able to understand the lustful thought as a mere lustful thought. Not you are talking about the object. You are not talking about the object, but now you are talking about the lustful thought. Lustful thought has a nature to come and stay there for a while and ultimately disappear. That's a different kind of a perspective that you are taking in the Satipatthana. But actually Satipatthana itself has the Kayanupassana level, Asubha Bhavana. Asubha Bhavana is also there in the Kayanupassana section. Because immediately the yogi can't go to that Cittanupassana or Dhammanupassana. You better work out at the ground level so that to some extent you are able to minimize the lust.
So what would be an example for using the Asubha Bhavana instead of Vipassana?
Instead of Vipassana?
Yeah. In what kind of situation would we?
Now, say assume that someone is completely deluded with another person, say opposite sex person, and he's keep on thinking about her, keep on thinking. And many lustful thoughts are again and again coming to his mind. His mind is overwhelmed by lust. On such cases, assume that if we ask him to practice Anapanasati, not going to work. Because his mind is obsessed with lust. Such case, he has to give a fairly strong tool to attack the lust. So that's why the complete opposite is given now. Instead of now, he is looking at that girl or that woman as a very beautiful, attractive someone. But now you open and see, okay, look at this. See what is there. Okay, the feces are there. Say the phlegm is there. Blood is there. Urine is there. So you are giving the complete opposite picture. Now you are, my goodness. Is it the one I am being attracted? Now he feels ashamed and now the lust reduces. Now he, to some extent, he calms down. So therefore, to minimize different vitakkas, different thoughts, so there are different approaches available. So one approach is when your mind is lustful, you are given this kind of approach so that it will be removed. The opposite type of thoughts can be used to replace the existing kind of misleading thoughts. Vitakka Santana Sutta, if you are familiar, so the kind of replacement of thoughts are possible. So if you are attracted to lustful thoughts, you are giving the loathsomeness related thoughts. If you are going through some hateful thoughts, you are giving the loving kindness thoughts. You know, kind of opposite is introduced so that the mind is able to overcome that path. But later, as you said, in the Satipatthana practice, you are going to a fairly advanced level. So you are looking at the mind and understand, okay, this is a mere lustful thought. It has a nature to come and go. Now you are not supposed to go to the Asubha Bhavana. You are not, it's not necessary to practice Asubha Bhavana. Instead, you can handle it at your mind level. Yeah, good, good.
Avasarai Swaminwan, sir.
Niranja, I hope you are not angry with us.
No, I was listening. how you describe women.
Yeah.
Swaminwan, sir. One person raised his hand. I will allow.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Keshan, you can talk.
Thank you, Niranja, and Tunuran Saranai Bante. So with this discussion, what I was listening, how the lust and the opposite sex get attracted to each other. There was a time, I can talk about myself as well. when I saw the wife that I married, of course, there is some type of an attraction. Without that attraction, you wouldn't marry.
Yes.
And then through that product, I guess, you know, through that attraction, whatever it is, you know, like we had two kids, of course. And if not for the attraction, if not for the marriage, of course, there are multiple ways to have kids as well. The byproduct of that is the attraction that produces a child. If not that child, I wouldn't be exist. To a certain extent, for us to exist in this world, don't you think that type of an attraction also need to work out? But in our case, I understand purely in the case of if we are going towards the, or if our intentions are just purely in this lifetime that we wanted to attain nirvana or give up, then maybe in such cases you want to practice the Asubha Bhavana or different type of meditation methods in order to reduce that lust. That's how I have taken it. I always think about this dwelling, you know, like this sort of a conflict. If not for my parents, I wouldn't be exist. And if not for your parents, you wouldn't be exist. And so as Buddha, and so how do you reconcile these type of, that is my first question for you. I have another.
Yeah, yeah. So yesterday, actually, we were discussing something related to the rebirth.
Yes.
So there are Buddha points out another type of way to look at it. So he mentioned about the karma, where if there is no karma, which is destined to give fruits in a sensual realm, then you won't have the birth in the sensual realm. So since we had certain karma to operate, to give the fruits, to give the results in this sensual realm, okay, you are born to this sensual realm. So your consciousness has born to this sensual realm. So basically the karma also plays a fairly important role. So mother and father is actually one factor, but we have taken certain potential from our past lives as a karmic potential. It is being given fruits to a level that we had the kind of destiny to give certain fruits in this sensual realm. So we are now born to sensual realm, so we are going through that. So we are all that past karma, which is destined to give a fruit in the sensual realm, is now giving some results. So we are going through it. We are navigating through it. So that is one thing. So the other thing, actually, now this apart from your question, actually, when we are discussing Asubha Bhavana, we typically think only about the loathsomeness. But assume that you are being blindfolded to that compactness of the body. So we always consider this body as one unit, as one thing, because of its compactness, its solidity. But when you start dividing it to different components, different body parts, and look at it again and again by different body parts, this compactness view start sort of breaking out. Now you are not looking at the body as a mere one thing, as my body, as someone's body or someone. Now you look at it from a different angle. Okay, this body has so many components, little parts are there. So when you have that attitude, when you have that angle, it's difficult to being attracted. Now say, for example, you are looking at a car in a car show. It's really beautifully assembled and beautifully prepared, and price tag is there. There's a one saleswoman also there, so that you've been further attracted and you've been blindfolded to this outer appearance. But assume that you disassemble the whole thing, right? You divide it into little pieces and spread all the thing out in front of you. Now you can't say, I mean, I am being really attracted to any of these parts. So these are little parts, say nuts and bolts and wheels and gears and all that, many, many little components. None of them are attractive. So similarly, so when we are able to dissect the body to little pieces, little body parts, now we are operating at another level, not merely using kind of a loathsomeness meditation, but we are dissecting the body, very much like we are going to the anatomical parts. Now you can see the anatomical parts, little parts. Now you can't find a woman, you can't find a man. You will find different components are there, body parts are there, isn't it? So typically when they are assembled in a certain fashion, certain style, we give the name, ah, she's a woman, he's a man. So it's a name given, isn't it? Now say, if you consider a train, how many parts are there? If we divide it to very higher level, okay, we can say 10 compartments and one engine. That's one way of giving it. One compartment, how many parts are there? Isn't it? So if we start dividing like that, so where is the train? Isn't it? So now this is another approach that we are taking in the Vipassana, say kind of dissecting, dividing into little pieces, so that the compactness view, what we call the Ganasanya, that perception is broken out. Now you are not being fooled as before, because to some extent you can see the reality. Okay, it is not one unit, it is not one thing, but it consists of so many little components, little parts. So ultimately when they are assembled, we have given a name called man, a woman, a train, a bus, a car, etc. So that is another area that we have to look at. So therefore, rather than simply limiting our practice to the Asubha Bhavana, we can look at different components available in the body, different body parts available in the body, not emphasizing the Asubha, loathsomeness, but knowing their true nature. Okay, this part is there, this part is there, this is for this is for that. So many, many little components are there. There is no man, there is no woman. Isn't it? Many, many body parts are there. That's another thing. So what is your next question, Geshan?
Yes. Thank you, Bhante. I understand the mere reason why I asked, simply because, you know, our existence, of course, I understand the whole concept, and the analogy of a car and breaking down into small granular level. Once you sort of break it down, there is no car per se, you know. So yeah, so we can imply the same kind of thing for the body as well. My second question for you, Bhante, I have been listening to the Anapanasati Sutra multiple times, and then I've been sort of contemplating about the Kayanupassana. I think while I was listening to your teaching, you talk about in that that Kayanupassana, I think you break it down into four sections, rather. And the very first one, I understand, and you don't basically sort of address the third and the fourth. I have listened multiple times, and then you go to the fourth one. So would you be kind to sort of talk about the third, second and the third as well, if you don't mind?
You mean the first quadrant or tetrad?
So yes, in the Kayanu, so you break it down into four sections of that.
Correct.
Four quadrants.
Yeah. So you want to discuss the second?
Second and the third. Uh-huh. If this is not the platform, I can write to you on a different time as well.
If there are no other questions related to today's topic, we can take your question. You have another question? If we have a question to today's topics, we'll take it first and then we'll go to your question.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah,
one moment, Niranja. So we have a question. Yeah, from our side.
No, there's nothing from this.
Okay.
Nothing from this end other than.
Fine.
Tirvasaranai Bhante.
Yeah.
So as you were talking about that car and the engine and how it relates with our body.
Mm-hmm.
What I got into my mind was like, what if like the outside appearance is like a body kit? Like actually with this Kalyanamitta's question, I ultimately got my answers eventually. And also you mentioned that about the train. And what got onto my mind, like, what if it was a JCB? Like, it has a handle.
Yeah.
And the hydraulic system, it works like our body.
Correct.
And what would be the driver who's inside the JCB?
Excellent, yeah.
Is it...
It's very much like our mind.
Yeah, like, is it our vinyana?
We can say so, but not merely vinyana.
Mana or something.
Whatever
like
it is, yeah. Those are the... So the physical components also we can see it consists of little parts. So then the driver is very much like our mind, but we need to remember that is also not one single thing. That's why in the disposition of the Buddha, dispensation of the Buddha, so the mind also he divides into four main categories. So you have feelings, you have different perceptions, you have different thoughts, formations, intentions, and then the knowing part also. Knowing part, say you through your eyes you can see, you through your ears you can hear, through the nose you can smell, through the body you can feel, and again certain mind objects you can know through the mind. So therefore the mind also works say with a multitude level, so not as a one thing, it also has many parts.
Like what I
ultimately
like,
nothing is there.
Yeah, nothing is there. Like it's same like our body is like also like an hydraulic system, right?
Correct.
Pumps and those things are happening.
Yes.
While you were mentioning about the car, what I got into my mind, like the JCB, exactly. Yeah. JCB. What I want to know is like it relates with this question also, like when we were practicing Anapanasati, I have never, I don't know much. I don't know anything about Asubha Bhavana. I know it reminds of the waste of our bodies and it reminds us how to let it go.
Correct.
Like if someone is so much full of lust, not in that
balance. Field.
Yeah. Is it the best way for letting him to understand about those feelings, to let go of those lust feelings? Or what will be the best way for him to recommend, is it Anapanasati or Asubha Bhavana?
So it depends on the situation also. That's why if he is completely fooled at that time, if he is completely obsessed with lust, it's very difficult for him to recommend Anapanasati because his mind is lustful. I mean, his mind is completely... he can't simply feel the breath at that time. He has filled with so much of lustful thoughts are there. Because Anapanasati, now to give you a kind of a simile, now suppose you want to drive in the highway, but you are here in a jungle. So now you first have to find out a JCB to look at, prepare a path first, right? So you are not yet at the highway, a very prepared carpeted road, but you are in a really on a very messy jungle side. First of all, you have to find a way to prepare a road towards that highway. Say you are now cutting the trees and remove the all that bushes and etc. And you are cleaning the path, and now you are going closer to the highway. Ultimately, you are putting your vehicle to the highway. Now you can go very easily towards the highway. Anapanasati is like the highway. Asubha Bhavana is very much like you are preparing the ground. So you are removing all that dirty and the bushes and all the thorns and etc. So that you can reach the highway.
Like once you're in the jungle, there's no way to go out. Like we have to find a JCB and we have to clear the road. And it's like Asubha Bhavana is like that. And the car, if you're in the main road, we have to find the entrance. We have to just find the entrance and we have to enter the highway.
Enter the highway. So even now, first you probably have the typical footpath. It's also not that comfortable. It's a maybe gravel path. It's also not comfortable. Now you are getting to the typical road. It's also not that comfortable. Later you get into the highway, maybe fairly comfortable. It will directly take you to the Nibbana.
Yeah, completely understood.
Therefore, I mean, Anapanasati is a really excellent path. But immediately for a lustful person, lustful mind, angry mind, immediately recommending it, okay, now you practice Anapanasati when he is really angry, when he is really lustful, might not work sometime. So in such cases, you have to neutralize the mind to some extent. Say, if he's really angry, so probably you can keep your hands onto your tummy and try to concentrate on your rising and falling of the body. Again, you are grounding yourself using the body. Might work. Or you practicing Metta Bhavana for a while. Might work. Later, you can soften the mind, refine the mind and take it to the nostril and look at the breathing. Maybe working out, because mind has somewhat calmed down, restrained to some extent, because Anapanasati requires certain kind of a restrainment. Otherwise, very difficult.
Totally understood.
Yeah.
And if someone is like cannot put into those positions, it's better to meet a Bhante, someone like you, mm-hmm. to get the necessary steps or necessary learning. To let that person to find the best way, it's the best.
That's also possible. Now, that's why, I mean, sometimes different meditation techniques are there.
And different people, they have different
temperaments, yeah. Different characteristics are there, characters are there. So, I mean, even though many tools are available, so we need to find out which tool will work for you, but for that particular task.
It will be easier for to attain Nibbana.
You have a certain task to complete during your work hour. Many tools are there. Say knives are there, saws are there, different components are there, tools are there. So which one are you going to use?
For work.
For the particular certain task, right? So that you have to have your common sense. Okay, for this task I have to use a knife. For this task I have to use a saw, hand saw or something like that. So similarly, the different meditation tools are there. So appropriate tool, something we need to recognize, find out, maybe depending on our situation. Maybe main component, main tool, main primary object may be Anapanasati. But to put yourself to that track, you might need certain ground preparation.
Much metta, yeah, Bhante, yeah, much metta.
Yeah. Okay, 8:35. Anything also there?
Yes, Avasarai Bhante, as I understand, some beings are spontaneously born in the divine realms. They spontaneously...
No, not only in the divine realm, even in the apaya, you know, this certain apayas, lower realms, they're also realms. Spontaneously born.
With reference to those beings that have cultivated a lot of merit that causes them to be spontaneously reborn in the higher realms, so long as they have not really taken out the root of craving, they are still subject to being reborn in the mother's womb, even after being born there.
Definitely. That's a bad side. I think we discussed that last Tuesday, I think, because... Yecha rupupaga satta yecha rupatthayino nirodhang nappajananto agantaro punabha. So Buddha mentioned, so there are people, obviously there are people now in the sensual realm. So that is the lowest realm. Either lower realm, the human realm, the heavenly realm. So this is the lowest kind of a realm that we are in. Sensual realm, what we call the kama loka. And then, say someone finds out, okay, this is not good enough, so I need to go to a more refined level. He go to the fine material realm, Rupa Loka. That's a Brahma Loka, actually. Rupa Vachara Brahma Loka. You know the lifespan? Eons. Lifespan is eons, not 100 years, 200 years, 1000 years, but eons of years. Very, very, very long lifespan. But as you said, they have to return back once their concentration power reduced. Either they will be reborn as a heavenly person, heavenly being, or they will be reborn as a human being. So after come back here, if they do the demerit, bad things, unwholesome things, they'll be reborn back in the lower realm. So that's the disc there. So similarly, Arupa realms are also there. Assume that someone is practicing Arupa Jahanam. Akasa Nanchayatana, Vinyana Nanchayatana, all that. they'll be reborn. Assume that they were able to maintain that at a very higher level, and they'll be reborn in the such arupa realms. They are also, the lifespan is very, very long, eons. But once that concentration power reduce, weaken, diminish, they have to return to a further, to the another level. There's a still potential to go back to the lower realms. So there is no escape. Only a temporary escape is there, but you will return. So that's a risk. So that's why Nirodhang Nappajananto Agantaro Punambhavang. So Buddha mentioned, without knowing the cessation, they'll be returned back to the rebirth. They are continuously continue this rebirth cycle. They are not completely ceased. So Buddha's solution, therefore, also not thinking that if we think, okay, now I am a person, I am so-called being, I am going to annihilate myself, so there is no one in the future. That's also wrong path. That's also not the correct view. That's called the Uchedavada. So we think, okay, there is a person here, there is a self here, and Nibbana is that after the death, I do not exist. That's also wrong. So the approach is that you realize, okay, there is no self here, there is no being here, there is no Atma, soul here, but the five aggregates are operating because of various causes and conditions, again and again, spontaneously, momentarily. So that is how this whole existence is experienced. Even now there is no self, even though I am ignorantly feel there is a self. But at a given moment, assume that you are able to realize fair amount of vipassana, develop certain wisdom. At that moment, probably you may understand, okay, there is no self. I mean, these things are operating, these things are continuing. But I don't feel the sense of I. I don't feel a strong person now. But things are continuing. Things are continuing. Then you are, say you die, there is no rebirth because you are not grasping as a person. You are not identifying as a person. So the things are very much like dissolved. Something like that. So very interesting area. Anything, Kelvin?
Avasarai Swami Bansa. Yeah. Maybe I'll go back to the loathsome part
right.
that we talked about. I read the Visuddhimagga and they gave a very interesting angle, yeah,
uh-huh.
to look at Asubha.
Mm-hmm.
Say you the 9 wound openings,
mm-hmm.
they leak everything. They leak a lot of stuff.
Correct.
When they leak, and the things that they leak out, would you touch them? You wouldn't touch them because maybe they're disgusting. Mm-hmm. Your spit is disgusting.
Correct.
Your defecation is disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
So when they're outside, you don't like it. What? They're always inside you. So that from that angle, you can start from there, and it's a practical way of looking at it.
Exactly.
And it's a very fast way of looking at it because it's right there. Would you take your spit back after you spat? You wouldn't.
Mm.
Would you take your snot back? You wouldn't. Exactly. Everything you wouldn't put back. You wouldn't even touch it.
Exactly.
So that's
But they all were inside. Right.
Yeah.
Now also still they are gathered inside.
Yeah.
But we don't look at it like that. We like the whole thing. We like the whole thing is, oh, this is beautiful me. So don't touch me. I am so clean. You are really not clean.
Yeah. And if your spit touch me, I'm going to kill you. Yeah. And if something of your fluids touch me, I'm gonna be murderous.
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes, like if you think about lust, if you think about, I like this lady or this girl. And then when you touch their fluids, do you feel nice? Do you like it? You might like it because you are thinking of something. Something is holding. Something is giving you an eye. Something is giving you a conceit.
That's right.
That.
Now, when even a person is fully blindfolded with lust, he even will touch it.
Yeah.
That's why, they may go to that extent.
Yeah.
So that's why you need to understand how lust is blinding you. So how much ignorant we are at that moment. You can't see penetratively at that moment. You see the outer appearance. Your mind is completely blinded.
Yeah, totally blinded.
Totally blinded.
Until you're alone and then you realize,
Yeah. probably that woman might say, is this really dirty that you really fellow fool you like? Then he will, yeah, is it really?
Yeah.
At then that you moment he will understand.
that's all I have to add.
Yeah, yeah, thank you. Okay. Geshan, yeah, your question. Are you there?
Geshan? Yes, okay. I am still here. Yes.
Okay. So actually, as you said, in Anapanasati, there are 16 steps mentioned, divided into four quadrants. And first quadrant talking about Kayanupassana, second Vedanupassana, third Chittanupassana, and fourth Dhammanupassana. The second quadrant talk about the Vedanupassana. So once your body fairly calms down, so there may be very, in the Anapanasati point of view, you might feel very pleasant feelings. So you might feel floating like, and you feel happy. Your mind has certain uplifting kind of blissful feelings. Now those are also feelings, by the way. Those are also feelings. So those are also feelings. Now the advice is look at it as feelings. Don't get completely absorbed to those feelings. So you are asking for those feelings, you start liking those feelings, rather look at them also as mere feelings. Piti pati sangvedi asasissamiti sikkati, sukha pati sangvedi asasissamiti sikkati, chitta sankhara pati sangvedi asasissamiti sikkati, pasambayan chitta sankharam asasissamiti sikkati. So you may start with very pleasant feelings, but they are also merely feelings. Now the way, if you are able to look at them like that, now you are not being carried away by those feelings and you are not really asking those feelings, you are not attracted to those feelings, but they are merely feelings. Now you start looking at them properly, objectively, and they also come and go, they also change, and now they completely calm, relax, and there may be even different perceptions appear. Say you might see different images. To some people, that also can happen, but they are also merely perceptions. Don't give names to them, don't being attracted to them, and just they are also perceptions. So you look at them also objectively, and that also will disappear. Now the mind further calms down. And then you go to the Chittanupassana section, Chitta Patisangvedi Asasissamiti Sikkati. Now you are directly looking at the mind. Directly looking at the mind, okay, what is in the mind? So there may be thoughts coming and going. So since you are giving some freedom to the mind to think, you are not strongly concentrating the mind. Rather, you open up the mind to some extent, give some freedom to the mind. And now different thoughts may appear in the mind. So they also come and go, Chitta Patisangvedi. And now you are looking at the mind, the thoughts particularly, as mere thoughts. Now you have a fair relaxation. Because previously you are being tortured by the thoughts, but now no more. They are coming and going. They are merely thoughts. So you feel relieved from the thoughts. And as a result of that, now you can even relinquish the thoughts. Or we can say, free your mind from thoughts. You are freeing the mind now. Further and further freeing the mind. So the last step of the third quadrant is about vimochayan chittang asasissamiti sikkati. So you are freeing the mind, freeing the mind, freeing the mind. Ultimately, there is no body to perceive, no feelings to perceive, no perception to perceive, no thoughts to perceive. And now you can say you are unbounded. Your mind is not holding anything, not grasping anything, not footing onto anything. So the mind is completely free. There is no grasping at all. There is no any association at all. Completely freed mind. So this is how in the second and the third quadrants, so you are further freeing the mind, not associating anything in the world, not grasping anything in the world.
Yes, Guruan Saranai Swami Nansa. Yes, I understand. And I think on the freeing side, while I see, when I meditate or when I sort of do day-to-day activities, I sort of watch my mind. I see it's like a passing cloud. These thoughts comes, and I always sort of watch it. If there is something that I need to respond, then I do. If not, I just keep watching, and then they decay. I don't make a attempt it to sort of decay, it automatically disappears.
Right.
And then there are certain gaps in between as well. There's no thoughts comes, and I kind of wonder what's happening. You know, why has that stopped? Or I sometimes sort of see, and then certain, of course, certain thoughts appears again as such, you know, like say if my wife calls and respond, so I make a response. If not, you know, like the, if certain thoughts that comes without any external communication per se, I don't respond to it. I just watch. I just keep on watching. But certain times when I work, I sort of get these sort of thoughts. If I do it this way, it is much better. But then I think to myself, who would know about it? And why do I need to do it? I sort of question it. And then am I doing it? You know, so I question. I just analyze it. To a certain extent, is it because I need a promotion or do I need certain type of gratification? Why am I trying to do that? If there is a real need, but if there is, of course, I will do it. But so certain sort of, otherwise I will put that into a bucket as, oh, these are busy work. Try not to sweat on it kind of thing. So I'll just watch. And while I was watching, it disappears, it decays. That's what I sort of do. And that is the practice what I have tried to build. So that's one of the things what I wanted to ask this question, just to sort of see, have I understood correctly? And then there is this second and the third issue that I had. And that's the reason why I asked.
Yeah. So basically, I mean, when there are no thoughts, just calm down. You don't need thoughts.
Yes. And Bhante, for me, you know, like those times, you know, it's maybe about several seconds or maybe half a second, maybe close to about a minute. But then again, it comes. It's not... You know, like for 1 hour, there is no thoughts coming, or 2 hours, there is no such for me. So I think it's for me to practice more, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, there may be instances there are no thoughts, complete absence of thoughts. You need to recognize that as well. Now, assume that there is a thought came and it disappeared, but there is no new thought. So what are you going to do?
Do nothing about it.
Exactly. Just be.
Absolutely do nothing. Yes.
Just be. Just be. And at that moment, try not to keep your attention onto the body or to the any kind of, say, feeling. How about not giving any object to the mind? So that's a challenge.
It is. And I have seen that, but I try to go and grab something.
Yeah, that's a tendency. Yeah,
crazy.
Exactly, exactly. Yes. So that is the tendency available in the mind. So it always look for something to get attracted. It always look for something to attach with. So that tendency is there. Now you look at it, you know it, but don't give the chance. Say, suppose that you assume that very much like, say, you are falling. When you are falling from some place, you are looking for something to hold, no? Either you are looking for a ground to hold, a stick to hold, a rope to hold. Something should be there for you to hold. We are asking something to hold. If we are not holding anything, we will fall. So let you fall.
Yes.
Let you fall. So don't give any rope, because all ropes going to be broken. They'll break. So don't give any footing. So try to be no footing, not established, unestablished. Very, very challenging, actually. Very, very challenging, because the tendency in the mind is always look for something to attract, look for something to attach, look for something to grasp. But this is the challenge. Okay, don't give anything to grasp. Can you give the mind complete freedom? Completely unassociated. You might feel frightened. Just do it and see.
Yes. Thank you very much, Bande. Teruvan Saranai.
Yeah, Teruvan Saranai. Okay, since there are no more questions, I would like to ask Venerable Dhammosada to conduct the sharing of merits.
Vasai Swami Nohanse, very fortunate we are to hear this Dhamma discussion, to have this Dhamma discussion, to hear these teachings that lead to dispassion and to complete cessation. Much merits for Swami Nohanse for doing the exposition of this sutta. And since we also get merits for listening and for heeding the advice of the Buddha, we would like to extend these merits to our parents, to all the devas. May our relatives rejoice in our merit making. May the deities rejoice in our merit making. May all celestial beings protect the Dhamma exposition and the dispensation of the Buddha for a long time. And may the seeds of Dhamma that we have received continue growing, producing path, fruition, and Nibbana. I invite you all to join in the recitation of the traditional Pali verses for the sharing of merits.